afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
You should have seen how fast he gets to that microphone, too. He's like lightning fast right there. Sometimes I do wish like there was a camera in here. We could just get little like snippets, you know.
Oh, it was great. We were playing musical microphones earlier.
Oh, that's always nice. Yeah, because everything seems to be like working fine, huh? Well, that's always confusing. So, thanks to our sponsors, and our sponsor today is Powerhouse Solar.
Powerhouse Solar.
Bill, do you? Yep. What's with the hand rubbing?
I'm cold.
Like, is there something we should know?
I'm giddy. Bill's Every morning I wake up and rub my hands together.
Bill's got a tick. He's got a new tick. Maybe we should.
I just haven't been the same since January 20th. I'm sorry. I just.
I know everybody's still like dancing and prancing, and I know. Yeah. All the people that I usually run into that are so frustrated and upset, they're frustrated and upset about the things that are still going on, you know, the trying to take out the dams and all that stuff. But boy, when it comes to the broader political scope,
yes,
happiness.
Every day is a new day.
All right, so let me finish my work here. This was supposed to be your work, the sponsor work.
Oh, yeah. Powerhouse Solar. Bruce and Sue Blake. Number one guys in running for solar. If you want to, if you need solar panels or need to put in a solar system, they're the guys to go to.
Or you just want to know how it works. Because we had them come to our house one time and just tell us.
Oh, yeah.
Like how it might work, what it might do for us, you know, what were our choices.
Yep. Very professional. They'll put a whole program together for you, show you how much you'll save, and so forth. So, yeah, give them a call. 530-275-5600. Powerhouse Solar.
Correcto.
There you go.
Look at that. Got the hang of this now. And our guest. Okay, so let's speed over to the guest part because this is, you know, we hear a lot about what's going on college campuses, right? We're always hearing about the millennials, this and that and the other thing. And I don't know about everybody else, but I don't traffic in that circle anymore. I'm done with college and done with college by about, I don't know, 30 years, maybe 25, something like that. So I'm hearing this stuff that's happening on college campuses with puppy rooms and movies that, you know, and Play-Doh and safe spaces and all this stuff. And I think the danger is that we think everybody's lost their mind on the college campus. It sounds like it's a vast majority, but I was.
Yeah, you don't hear a whole lot of good stuff coming out of the college campuses today.
I was cruising through Twitter, though.
Scary stuff.
And I saw an article. Berkeley College Republican members allegedly hounded for political views. And I was like, well, if you're going to go to the extreme, you know, kind of crazy left, Berkeley pops to in my mind. And I was like, they have college Republicans there? That's pretty awesome. So I clicked on it. And I found our new best friend, Peter Van Voorhis, who's on with us today, and he's going to give us the behind-the-scenes scoop on what's really happening. And I know nothing other than that about Peter, so he'll have to tell us. That's all I know about you, is you can use Twitter, and so can I.
How are you, Peter?
I'm doing excellent. How are you guys doing today?
And you're kind of a, let's see, what would you be, a mastodon? You're almost the last of your of your species.
That's true. All three of us college Republicans left.
I was going to ask you how many there were. It's three?
Yeah, well, so I actually just wrote the article on the UC Berkeley Republicans. I actually go to UC Irvine.
I noticed that your other articles were about your Irvine. I thought, well, you must do a lot of traveling or something.
Yeah, no, I go to UC Irvine, and I formerly was a member of the College Republicans there. So, I do a lot on various campus issues all around Orange County where I live, and then also across the country, just really trying to expose what's actually going on. And so, you know, thank you all for having me on today. I really appreciate it and look forward to telling your listeners a little bit about the insanity that I get to go through. So we'll have fun doing it.
Yeah. I can only imagine. You know, we hear all these horror stories about college professors and some of their antics. And it doesn't sound like a real, pardon the pun, safe place if you're a Republican or a conservative. It sounds
Dangerous. Downright weird.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely very difficult to be a college Republican on campus, or just a conservative in general, because I think, you know, we all know about the left. They really, you know, claim to be tolerant of all ideas, but really they're tolerant only of all ideas that they agree with. So unfortunately, if you happen to not hold those same views, you're automatically, you know, racist, sexist, all those different things. But, you know, you just got to kind of learn to let them sort of brush over you and just kind of not pay attention to them and just keep going the course. And that's what we always try and do.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that, you know, Berkeley is the, you know, the so-called home of free speech, and yet you say something that they don't agree with there now, and all of a sudden it's not so free. I find that very interesting.
Yeah, Bill, I mean, that was what I found so ironic about this story, and that was why I was so excited to write it when one of my buddies up at Berkeley told me about it, because, you know, part of the story does deal with, or the story talks about a few different events, basically talking about how it's very hard to be a Republican, or a college Republican specifically, at UC Berkeley. But what I found most ironic about it was there was a part of the story where there was a video where members of the college Republicans actually caught some campus leftists ripping down various pro-Trump posters that they had put up. But what was really funny about that is it was actually in Sproul Plaza, which is where the entire American college free speech movement started about 50 years ago. So it really shows how the left has gone from very much supporting free speech and being the proponents of that in the 1960s to suddenly right now in 2016, 2017, they're totally anti-free speech. So it's just, that was a very, very stark contrast to me.
That's just sad. And they were, I think part of your article was they were planning on canceling classes.
Yeah.
They were having like their boycott or whatever.
Yeah, that was actually at UC Irvine and actually at a lot of schools across the country. I wrote an article for Campus Reform on that, and I also did an opinion piece for the Daily Wire just kind of on my thoughts on that. But specifically at UCI, there were two separate professors that I found out about. I'm sure there were dozens more, but the two that I found out about, they actually canceled class, not only to allow their students to go protest, but actually encouraging students to protest and actually... sorry about that. Roommate just walked by.
Gilbert.
Trying to think what I was going for again. So they canceled class, and they actually were out there protesting themselves with their student, and they said to come over and say hi during the protest. So it's just, it's gotten to the point where, you know, you have these professors, they're really not for education. They really just want to indoctrinate their students, and it's the point where it's just, it's insane.
Yeah, I as a parent, I would really be thrilled that I'm paying my kids' tuition and they cancel classes to protest. That's nuts. It's just crazy.
Well, you interviewed, maybe when we come back from the break, I want to look up the article. Which one was it? We've added four articles from you. It was a professor. Was it the College Fix or Campus Reform that was about the professor?
It was at Campus Reform that was about the professor, and also an opinion piece on that for the Daily Wire.
Yeah, that was terrific. And I thought, well, you know, if more of them were like that guy, maybe we wouldn't be having this. But let's chat about how you found him. He seemed almost like a needle in a haystack when we come right back with our guest, Peter Van Voorhis. He's down at UC Irvine here. I've lied to everyone. I told him you were at Berkeley. But... he wrote an article about Berkeley. Berkeley was involved. I wasn't completely
crazy. That's right.
I wasn't completely
crazy.
You didn't
make the whole thing up. There was a sliver of truth in there. You're a professional journalist.
Hey, I could be a professional journalist. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Don't tell me cause.
words are weapons now. Peter, how do you, on a day-to-day level, do you have to use all these, you can't say his and hers and all that at your school?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't, at UC Irvine at least, gone that crazy. There's definitely a contingency of professors who, you know, would want their students to always use the correct pronouns. But I'm actually a finance major, so luckily we don't have too much of that. But in the few kind of general ed classes, you know, blank studies, whether it's gender studies or, you know, whatever other type of very liberal courses, yeah, there's professors who absolutely want that.
Now, does Irvine have, safe spaces or freedom of speech zones, or, you know, do they do all that too?
They do. I haven't been to them myself just because I can't really fathom the thought of being in a safe space. But, for example, after the walkout that they did last Friday, but on Inauguration Day, when all the students and professors walked out of class, afterwards they went to a safe space where they said specifically, you know, that all ideas would be tolerated. But obviously, of course, they did not mean if someone was a conservative or a Republican or a Trump supporter or anything to do with that. So
yeah, what would happen if you...
What they call safe spaces and healing spaces and all of that crap here, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What would happen if you'd have shown up in a safe space and you were a conservative and you were happy? I mean, would they, like, throw you out?
I don't know. I would assume so. I mean, I certainly think if you walked in with a Make America Great Again hat on, that would not go over well. I think if you just stood in the back and didn't say anything, they would have no idea. But certainly if you piped up and said, hey, you know, I disagree with what you're saying, you would definitely be shouted out of the room. Not a doubt in my mind.
Mm.
And are they really this, I guess, you know, are they as dramatic as it sounds like they are about all this?
You know, it's actually worse.
Oh, God. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, it's, you know, and you have to understand there's a small contingency of these very, very, very leftist students on campus. Not all of the kids on campus are bad. I think in general, there's a lot of students who are apathetic, and there's a good amount of students who are, you know, somewhat left-wing, and there's, you know, a few that are on kind of more of the right side of the spectrum. But the problem is the hyper-liberal contingency, whether that's professors, students, administrators, they tend to really dominate the narrative. You know, the average just person who's like, yeah, you know, I don't really like Trump, I kind of like Hillary, whatever, they're not the type to go out and protest, so they don't cause any attention, or they don't draw any attention to themselves. Whereas, you know, the people that are on the hyper left, aka the people who walk out of class, say the election's illegitimate and stuff like that, they're the ones who everyone's paying attention to. So in that sense, it is much worse, because they're the ones that are really shaping the campus climate.
Mm.
Yeah, and for some reason, there don't seem to be any adults in the room, you know, who say, look, get over it, move on, you're here to get an education.
Yeah, you certainly don't hear about it.
Of course, because they'd be shouted out of the room. You know, I mean, these people do not want to listen. That's the fundamental difference. I think not everyone, but I think most people on the right side of the political spectrum, they're willing to hear opposing ideas. We may not agree with them, but we're willing to hear you out if you have a liberal idea. Unfortunately, on the left, what they do is they claim the moral high ground. They say, if you don't agree with us, you're racist, you're sexist, you're a bigot, you're whatever else they come up with.
You must be silenced.
You must be silenced.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It is impossible to have a discussion with them. Trust me, I've tried. I spent my entire freshman year trying to have conversations with people, and it just didn't work. And at the end of the day, all you can do is really expose what they're doing, which is why, you know, I do all this writing. And at the end of the day, just put out your opinion as well.
Yeah, and I really hope people will go to the website where we have a little cluster of articles, and if you send me others, I'll post them. But you're really, I was an English teacher at the beginning of my career path when I went to Humboldt State. Good grief, the craziest liberal.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't that bad back then. I mean, I went there in 1979, and you had the, you know, as we referred to them, the hair legs. But
yeah.
So you had that. Bob, did you go there or your wife just went there?
My wife went there.
Yeah, our forest supervisor up here on the Shasta Trinity National Forest, he went there. We all seemed to be pretty normal. There was always a weirdo set. You know, there was the hacky sack people in the quad that, you know, you kind of picture. But we didn't hang out with them. And I guess most of my classes were, I don't know, the professors were just sort of teaching their classes. they weren't all involved in this political, or I should say hyper-partisan, because it's not really political. It's just kind of a weird hyper-partisanship. This man that you found, though, this professor, Jonathan Roth, he's at ROTH of San Jose State. I thought
that's
your
correct.
Article on him that's labeled thecollegefix.com is the place where it is. And liberal professor slams campus echo chambers, academic ideologies, and the intolerant left. But he is really the left. He's just, I thought he did a good job of distinguishing. Did you go meet with the guy? What was he like?
So I didn't meet with him because obviously I didn't want to fly all the way up to San Jose. But you know, we had a pretty long conversation and we'd been corresponding for weeks on this. And what I thought was fascinating is here you have someone. Well, first of all, we're going to want to distinguish between liberal and the left.
Correct.
While many on the left claim the liberal label, I would say that most of them, they're not actually liberal, because liberals, at least traditionally, are, you know, very open to new ideas, willing to have a discussion, whereas
sure.
the left, or the radical left specifically, they're the ones that try and shut down opposing points of view.
Yeah, I'm glad,
I just want to,
I'm glad you point that out, because that's a great point. There is a difference.
Yeah, so that's what we're really talking about here. But what I found fascinating with Professor Roth is he is someone who is a liberal through and through. You know, although he does hold somewhat conservative positions on, you know, Israel and a few other things like that, but generally, you know, very much someone that considers himself to be a liberal and acts like a liberal, but he's actually fighting to bring conservative speakers to campus and bring more conservative professors onto staff, because he recognizes that the point of, and I believe he's quoted as saying something like this in the article. He says, you know, essentially, intellectual diversity is so critical to the academic mission, because originally, you know, the point of a university was not to change the world necessarily, it was to interpret the world and learn about it and prepare people to go out into the world. But
sure, you have to hear both sides of the argument, and you can't shut down one side and then, you know, walk away with an education that's well-rounded. It doesn't work that way.
That's correct. And what happens with conservative students, I mean, I have certainly been challenged in my beliefs, and I think I'm stronger in my conservative beliefs because I've had them challenged. But what happens, unfortunately, is you get these, you know, liberal students or leftist students, however you want to classify them, who come into college, and then what happens is, you know, they never have their views challenged. They just sit there and they hear the same thing over and over again. It would be like if I went to college and I only heard conservative points of view. I wouldn't know anything. I would go out in the real world and I wouldn't know how to defend that.
Right.
That's the same thing that's happening with these liberal students. So you're really, in doing so, you're denying them an education is what
right.
you're doing.
In that article with Professor Ross, you have a picture of a sign that I think is pretty poignant. We condemn freedom of speech that hurts other people's feelings.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, is that what it's
like,
really about?
Let's unpack that. And that just doesn't make any sense.
No.
Well, a lot of those folks are, you know, they're really easy pickings going forward. The interesting part is the radical left, or however we want to call it, that the intolerant left, when they are keeping young people of, you know, whether they're high school or college age, when they're keeping them in that echo chamber of just one thing, the bad part is if those people ever are exposed to different ideas, I mean, you run the risk
they fall apart. We see that now in these big rallies when you get one of them that's being actually challenged by somebody on the right. They have their talking points for about the first couple of minutes, and then they're completely stumped. They don't know how to handle
because a
true argument. They can't.
They've never done it.
They aren't prepared.
That's absolutely correct. And what they do is then suddenly when they realize they're backed into a corner and none of their arguments are logical, because they're not really logical arguments. Obviously, we all know that if, you know, we're on the right, we certainly feel that way. Then they just start throwing insults is what they
exactly.
do. Exactly. You're racist, you know, all that stuff.
The name calling comes out.
Yeah,
it's interesting. I think that going forward, if you run this out, these are the people, you know, you look at who gets involved with the cult, who gets involved with just the human nature side of it. And if you're fed one thing and one thing only, and you never, that expression, steel sharpens steel, You know, if you never sharpen your steel, your ideas on anybody who opposes you, you're really at a tremendous risk for flipping and being absolutely anti everything you stood for. So these guys are literally creating their own opposition potentially going forward.
That's correct. And unfortunately, because they are embracing a liberal worldview, you know, in college they're taught, oh, you're so special. Oh, you don't like this idea? Great. We're going to ban that guy and, you know, you can go into your safe space. They get out in the real world and they try and get a job.
Exactly.
I mean, what are they going to say? Oh, I'm offended?
Yeah, exactly. They get in the real world and then that hits them in the face and there is no safe space. They're outnumbered. They're outgunned.
You look at it with children who ask all sorts of questions. They're not politically correct. They want to know. And here these guys can't help them because they've never thought about it. You know,
correct.
Erasing that side of the universe was the goal, but it's never going to happen. I just wonder how many of them, you know, I guess Horowitz, what's his name?
David Horowitz
springs to mind.
Yeah,
as someone who kind of went, wait a second, what are they saying? Well, hold on, that makes some sense, and then becomes their greatest opposition.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll be creating a lot more Horowitzes going forward by doing this.
That would be a dream. I would love to see that. I mean,
that's
David Horowitz. We actually hosted him at UCI.
Oh, is he great?
Probably about 8 months or a year ago. Yeah, we had him come in because at UCI they have what's called Apartheid Week. So the Students for Justice in Palestine and the Muslim Student Union, which are, you know, two fairly radical leftist groups on campus, they hold what's called Apartheid Week, where they talk about all the crimes that Israel has supposedly done, and they actually enact what they call an apartheid wall. So in the middle of campus, they write all of Israel's crimes and talk about, you know, how they hate Jews and all that stuff. So we brought in David Horowitz to say, hey, you know, this is BS, essentially. You know, I was part of the left. You know, I'm Jewish. I understand this. And he talked about it in a very poignant way, and I thought it was phenomenal.
Did he, when he was at your campus, did he take questions from those folks?
He did take a few questions. You know, he spoke, just gave a speech for most of the time, and he had another event to go to. But he took one or two questions. There were a few, you know, leftist people in there, you know, liberal people in there, however you want to define it, who did say a few questions. I don't remember exactly what they said, but. You know, he defended them very, very well, and, you know, they just ended up storming out of the building at the end. So I think you could tell kind of who won the argument.
Yeah, I've seen him field questions before, and he's just masterful in the way he basically dissects the topic and leaves them empty-handed. And that's exactly what they end up doing, is calling names and stomping out and shouting and, you know, basically having a little bit of a tantrum. So it's good that you have folks like that come in. Give them a challenge.
But see, what they don't realize, what these professors don't understand, is they're literally grooming potential David Horowitzes in their little safe spaces. Yes, we should all take our vitamins so we live long enough to watch that happen, because it's going to be awesome. I'm excited about it now. I mean, I'd like to get.
I think it's gonna be a great time.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I mean, when Barack Obama came in and all the stuff he was doing, and I remember saying to a large group of people that he's the best thing that's ever happened to conservatives, and people were mad at me. And it was like, no, you don't understand. All the people who are like me, and a lot of other people who were there. There were hundreds of us that came out with the early, you know, in the Tea Party. And well, I just looked around that room, and it's like, have any of you ever done this kind of thing before? No, no one had. So you look, what got us out of our, you know, job and our life, and what made us step up and get involved politically?
He educated a lot of folks.
He has been the father of the conservative movement.
He's the best gun salesman in America, that's for
there,
sure.
And there's that, yeah. He's done a very good job with that, too. It's kind of funny. So I guess I'm hoping going forward maybe we make this really strong turn. Are we ready for, got it up there? I was trying to read Bob's mind while he was typing. I'm obviously not good at that, so I had to wait until he saw me. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with Peter Van Voorhis. We're talking about what's going on at colleges and shutting down debates and that kind of stuff. I hope you'll hang with us. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
the time I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. The weekend at the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge I can't understand. Are you reeling in the years? Stowing away the time.
Sometimes the old classics. That was funny back when we were in college. Still funny. Maybe it's just a college thing. So, Peter, what year are you in school, or how long have you been there? And
so, I'm actually a third year in school, but I'm actually graduating this quarter for a variety of reasons. I'm able to get out a little bit early, so I'm actually pretty excited. That means a year and a half less of liberalism I have to hear. So, it's awesome.
That is phenomenal. Yeah, I've got a niece who graduated in three, and a nephew who's graduating in three. So, it's interesting. You know, back when I was in school, it seems like we were all trapped there for like 5 years, 6 years. I don't know. You guys must be. You guys must have a better plan than we did.
They have a better reason to get out early.
We were wandering.
Don't want to be there.
We were having fun. We were wandering around doing whatever, and you guys are like, "How do I make this shorter?" Well, are you going to do more writing? Is that something that's in your? You would have gotten. You would have had excellent grades in my class. I would have said, here, everyone, do this like Peter does.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, Aaron. I plan to keep writing for as long as I feel like I'm still contributing. I really, really enjoy it, but I also feel like it makes an impact. And I'm just incredibly passionate about showing the rest of America and the rest of the world what's actually going on these campuses. And also showing, you know, from the perspective of a conservative millennial, you know, how we view the world and how we think that we can reach out to more people. Because, you know, the Republican Party obviously hasn't done incredibly well with my generation for a variety of reasons. Some are our fault and some are not our fault. And I think, you know, we need a lot of other young people and, frankly, the rest of America to really, really get behind us and say, hey, we got to figure out how to reach out to our young people because we're the next generation of voters. So we got to do that to keep winning.
I think that's a really good point. I bring that up to people quite often because, you know, people are very fond of saying, well, everyone, you know, under the age of whatever, pick a number, is lost. And I have, like, what, 14 nieces and nephews between the ages of, I don't know, 15 and 25, I guess. And they're all really, you know, they're
well-grounded and they understand.
Yeah, they have good values. They, you know, they're smart. And they're all really basically very conservative. I don't know how they vote, but I've got a pretty good idea. And so I know from my own experience that no, all is not lost. And when I read your articles, I thought, you know, you would have done so well in all of the, you know, I always had my students, I was a high school teacher. And so I always had the kids write in a different form. You know, you're a reporter. No personal facts, right? Just the story.
Yeah.
Want you to tell the story, but without you being in it. And that one story about the liberal professor who was just really a sensible man was done in such our professional reporters could really take a lesson.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. I mean, I do opinion as well, so I'm able to get, you know, a little bit of my thoughts out on that. But what I really just try and do is stick to the facts. Just say, hey, this is what it is, and leave it up to, you know, your interpretation how you want to view it. And I think, unfortunately, what's happened, you know, with most people in the media, certainly more on the left than the right, is it's become very, very agenda-driven. I mean, I forget the exact name, but one of the very high-up editors at the New York Times said during, you know, election season before the election was decided that, you know, really reporting in an unbiased manner is no longer what we're going to do because Trump is so bad, Hillary's so good. We just can't let this happen. It's our duty to report in this way. And that's scary when you really think about it. You know, we all knew that, you know, it's been like that for a while, but the fact that now it is.
It's bona fide propaganda now.
Absolutely. And the fact that they're open about it, I mean, that's almost scarier that no one is really reacting that much to it.
Oh, I don't know if I agree with that. I think more and more people are reacting to it, and I truly believe the press has really dug themselves into a hole, and as long as they continue down this road of biased reporting, people are going to start turning their back on mainstream media and look for other sources that will give them the truth.
The bad part is now there are so many sources. I had someone call the office last week and they wanted to know. It was funny. It seemed like such an easy question, but it had no answer. She just wanted to know where she could go to vet things to make sure they were true. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you don't have any idea really how difficult that is.
What do you do, hit 10 of them and take a mean average?
It said, you know, wait until whatever thing you're worked up about has a bill number, and then go to congress.gov, look up the bill, and read the bill for yourself. But, you know, beyond that,
you just about have to.
A lot of it, yeah, you do have to kind of take an average. I was kind of chuckling because one of our guys in the chat room had written in here a quote from David Horowitz: "Inside every progressive is a totalitarian screaming to get out."
That is accurate. What I thought was really funny about the protests at UC Irvine where they walked out of class is one of the students had a sign that said "No to fascism." But what was so ironic about this is these students were not simply saying we don't like Donald Trump. They totally have a right to do that. I don't agree with them necessarily, but I support their right to do that. But what they were actually doing is they were saying, you know, the election is illegitimate. We do not support the peaceful transfer of power. When you really think about it, that's the definition of fascism. They're just a bunch of little fascists. I mean, is Ben Shapiro, you know, someone who I really look up to and respect and actually, you know, write for his website, dailywire.com. You know, he calls these guys special snowflakes, little fascists. That's what they are on the inside.
Yeah, which is really kind of, they don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know. They've bought in. Like I said, when you live, I think the professor was, Professor Roth was correct. When you live in an echo chamber, you're not hearing things correctly and in the right context. It was interesting. We forgot to log into the chat room while we were talking to you. We were having so much fun. We just kind of forgot to do our jobs here.
Totally.
It's like, oh yeah, the chat room. We better go see what people are asking us to say, right? We had somebody earlier on in the conversation. She said, I guess it could be a man too. Do you guys know as a fact if the verbiage of Trump's executive action on restraining immigration was the same as what Obama used back in 2011? And I've heard that too.
Yeah, I heard that it was
the language was very, very similar.
Yeah, it was the same.
And there also is a Bill Clinton speech, 1995, about closing our borders. I should find that again.
Well, there's an Obama speech where Obama wanted to build a wall.
Right.
It was okay.
But back in 95, Bill Clinton's speech, if Trump was to read that speech, oh my gosh, they'd be all over him. But a Democrat president said that back in 95. So it's really weird. It just, for some reason, it doesn't matter. We're not looking at the idea. We're looking at who said it.
Who said it?
When you talk to people at school, where do they get their, I mean, everybody's different, but what are the predominant, quote, news sources? If you're a college student these days,
you know, I would think a lot of it is Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. They really just see what their friends share. You know, I think a lot of people in my generation, for one reason or another, don't really tend to read the news. Maybe out of laziness, maybe they don't trust it. I don't know specifically, but I think a lot of people really just listen to their friends. And again, that's just more part of that echo chamber, because if all your friends are just saying the same stuff, you know. Republicans are horrible, Democrats are great, all that stuff. You're just going to take that as fact and believe it. And when I talk to these students and I bring up conservative points of view, you can tell that logically they agree with it, but emotionally they don't necessarily feel it, just because they have been so inundated with it with liberal ideas for years that they almost can't comprehend a viewpoint that's contradictory to their pre-existing worldview.
What's the, if you had to kind of rank the hot button stuff, what's going to get you the most hate, I guess, if you bring it up?
The most hate. I'm going to have to think about that. I can't put things in exact order, but I would say if I were just to discuss a few, I would say it would definitely be criticizing safe spaces. You know, if you were ever to criticize, you know, Black Lives Matter or any, hardcore leftist organization that you disagreed with, not on the basis of race, but just you disagreed with.
Sure, the idea.
Just with the idea of it. Any of that, any gender stuff, certainly if you called someone the wrong pronoun, that's not something you'd want to do. It will probably not be met with the best reaction. And just generally, I think just bringing up a contradictory idea.
It's interesting because it prior to the election, it seemed like all we were hearing about was global warming. And it seems like that's kind of taken a back seat now to the election. Do you find that on campus as well, that global warming is really not a hot topic anymore?
I do, yeah. There's certainly a contingency of, you know, people who still are talking about those environmental issues. A lot of times you'll have, you know, a big protest against whatever. And there's always, you know, there's some of the environmentalists, some of the social justice warriors, all of those different people in there. But I think what's happened is they've found a better opportunity to protest, because I think, you know, people were kind of tired of hearing the whole global warming thing, you know,
right.
Kind of got old, and now they have fresh stuff to protest.
Sure.
Trump and Republicans and pretty much anything we come up with.
Yeah.
Pretty much. If we look down through our archives, pretty much all that.
So what you're saying is you're driving the conversation now.
That's correct. When you think about it,
we
absolutely are. That's quite the position of power.
No kidding.
As we make ourselves new little David Horowitzes.
Yeah.
Awesome is that. I'm so excited about that.
Yeah.
Got to get that guy on. I want to talk about all this with him. We'd have to take one more quick break before the top of the hour. Our guest is Peter Van Voorhis. He is a student at UC Irvine. He is a conservative millennial. I guess the category of people that everyone thinks don't exist, but they do, thanks to Peter. We'll be right back. You can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Snowflake dressed in a snow white gown. Tap, tap, tapping at your window pane to tell you she's in town. Here comes Susie Snowflake, soon you will hear her say, come out everyone and play with me, I haven't long to stay. If you want
in her special safe space.
That song is incredible. We should play that at every single protest for the special snowflake.
Oh my God. Oh, Peter, we'll have to, Bob will have to send you his little playlist for today. I asked him,
That's
I go,
awesome.
Do we have any snowflake songs? He goes, oh yes, they're coming.
That's incredible.
That's what happens.
That was Rosemary Clooney, by the way.
That's what happens when you hang out with old people. Okay, so when was that? That was before my time.
Oh, before my time.
Before all of our time.
Definitely before my time.
We reach back into the archives and, hilarious. So, I wonder how, so if you, I know you probably can't do this, there's probably some sort of a net that drops out of the sky and you wind up incarcerated, but if you were to say, you know, if you were to tell someone, you know, don't be such a snowflake, or made a comment, something that included that, does just all hell break loose?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you would get screamed at. They would try and, you know, shout at you, talk over you. They wouldn't want to hear what you had to say, certainly not. So, yeah, it would not go over very well. I don't know if you'd land in jail, but I certainly think they would probably like to see you in jail.
I mean, safe space jail.
I thought about that.
Yeah, safe space jail, special college jail.
Another thing I noticed, and it's really kind of sad, is they're very boisterous and very outspoken when they're in a large group, but if it's one-on-one, they completely crumble in just minutes.
Like snowflakes, they melt.
Yeah, they do. They do, because they don't have the team support that's required to be a true, you know, successful snowflake.
Okay.
The, That's correct, because I think when you're in a giant crowd of people and you're just there shouting and the entire purpose is just to make a bunch of noise and try and get your opinion out there, I guess that's what they're trying to do. You know, you're not going to sit there and try and have a long debate with people. So there's kind of power in numbers in that sense. But the second, you know, you get pulled off the side and someone's talking to you about it, you quickly realize their arguments don't have a ton of rational basis.
No.
Well, okay, so I'll be the staff misogynist here, and we're volunteers, so we're not really on the staff, but, you know.
Yeah.
Just in case the station starts getting a lot of hate, you know, from those people on Sunday.
Of course.
who's worse, women or men?
As far as protesters go?
Yeah, just, you know, who's more irrational in your travels through Snowflake Town? Who's more irrational, the girls or the boys?
Snowflake Town. I would say they're pretty much the same. I mean,
it's the girls. Just say it. It's always the girls.
I don't think so, actually.
Really?
I really don't think so. If I had to say it, I would all... No, really, really, they're actually about the same. If I really, really were to think about it, I mean, maybe some are worse on a few issues, some are worse on others, but I would say at the core, they're pretty united in their worldview. I mean, they all... You know, they're all feminists, obviously. They're all love the environment. They're all social justice warriors. And I think the reason is because there's not tons of room for dissent.
You know, you either totally
accept the liberal playbook.
That and the guys have had all the testosterone beaten out of them.
That's true. They're all metro now.
That's correct. They are definitely a little bit metro.
They're wearing chick pants, as a friend of ours used to point out. That part's kind of scary, too. We've blended everybody. What are these people going to be when they grow up? Is there any, I guess, trend there so we can stay away from that industry?
Maybe Soros-funded professional protesters. I would guess that. I mean, they're pretty good at it, actually. They get a fair amount of attention. But no, I don't know what they'll do. I'm sure there are some who maybe will go out into the real world, realize it's crazy, maybe become little David Horowitzes and get over it. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who really, they're just kind of going to be bitter for their whole lives. I think at the core, these leftists kind of know that their worldview doesn't make sense, but they don't really know how to kind of escape it. They've been in the bubble for so long, and that's all that they know. So I think you'll just have a lot of unsatisfied people that think America's a horrible place, and you know, life sucks, and if you're not, you know, born a multimillionaire, rich, white, heterosexual male, that you can't progress in society. I think you're just gonna have a lot of really dissatisfied people.
Ooh, that's not awesome. Yeah, I was looking
that's
at your.
That's not awesome.
No, that is way less than
neither
awesome.
Is liberalism.
No, it's not awesome either. And so, in your campus reform article, I'm sure you have many, but in this one that we've linked, I really love the first picture that I can't even say online, but it uses the F word. So it's like the F word, America, AmerikKKKA.
Correct.
Like, what is up with that?
Hmm. Well, the sad part is, you know, all Trump really has to offer them is a job, and that is so wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, a job?
That's when you better make sure you can spell the F word correctly.
Yeah,
huh?
That's right.
You're not going to be a protester very long.
That's correct. I mean, you better make sure. They spelled the F word right there.
Yeah, they got that right.
That was not too hard, but America with three Ks, I mean, I think, you know... I get the point. Maybe, you know, they feel like Trump doesn't totally go with their racial views and whatever way that is. I don't necessarily agree or disagree. That's just how they feel about it. But for them to say, F this country, I mean,
yeah.
The only reason why you're allowed to protest is saying F this country, or the only reason, sorry, I should say, the only reason you're allowed to protest is because of the First Amendment and the freedoms that this country offers. Go try doing that in some dictatorship or some, you know, go try doing that in Venezuela and saying, F Hugo Chavez. Or,
yeah, you
know,
will be disappeared.
And that was provided to them by our men and women in uniform. And thanks to them,
correct.
By the way, we're not going to be, we're going to be unburning a bunch of flags today. That's what we're doing with Peter. We're going to come back and discuss more on this topic with our friend Peter Van Voris, who's down there in Irvine. Thanks, Peter. We'll be right back. This is We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.